electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger.
that we have.
The average dentist, the average doctor has any idea that they are not, you know, that they're actually poisoning the children up to a year
of age? No, I don't think they have any idea. I think the rank and file are very busy doing their work. They don't have time to read the literature. You mentioned I'm retired, and I am, and I have all the time in the world to read practically everything that comes out on fluoride. So, but they don't have the time, so they just take the word of their professional bodies and the government at face value without recognizing that these people have an agenda and they have a policy to protect and they have liabilities to worry about. For instance, you take the Center of Disease Control. Everybody thinks, oh, Center of Disease Control, there's a big health body, protects us. You know, when we have flu epidemics, they get the vaccinations. They're concerned about us. But you've got to be very careful, because as far as fluoridation is concerned, there's only one division at the CDC that's involved with fluoridation, and that's the oral health division, a bunch of dentally trained people. There's practically no doctors and no toxicologists among them, and their mandate is to promote fluoridation. They want 75% of the American population to be drinking fluoridated water by 2010. That's their goal. They give awards to communities. They support mandatory fluoridation. And there's nobody at the CDC to temper this in any way. There's nobody at the CDC that is looking at the health studies. In fact, the CDC, or rather the Oral Health Division, dismissed the relevance of the NRC report in 6 days. 6 days it took them to say, oh, this NRC report is consistent with our promotion of fluoridation at one part per million. Poppycock! How could they say that? They didn't, in 6 days, they didn't have time to read it, they didn't have time to digest it, let alone the 1,100 references, let alone do a health risk assessment to determine or estimate or guesstimate what the new safe drinking water standard should be, because there should be and well might be less than one part per million, which would kill fluoridation overnight. So something that has now taken the US EPA 3 years to do, and they've yet to do it, which is to do the health risk assessment to determine the new MCLG, we say, the maximum contaminant level goal, that's the best, no, the safe level. They haven't done that in 3 years, and yet we are meant to believe that the CDC magically did this in 6 days without writing a darn thing down on paper to explain how they did it. And then came back to the public and said, our policy is fine, despite what the NRC. So even, Stan, even when we get this prestigious body essentially proving that what we've been saying for a long time, two things. One, fluoride damages the body. Fluoride damages the bones. It damages the brains. It damages the endocrine system. It probably causes arthritis, and so on and so on and so on. And second thing, there is not an adequate margin of safety from the levels which are known to cause this effect to protect everyone in society. And that's the key thing. We're not talking about protecting the average person. We're talking about having a level which is protective of the very young, the bottle-fed baby, the very old, the people that are sick, the people who have poor kidneys, the people who have poor nutrition, the people with borderline iodine deficiency in particular. None of these people are being protected at one part per million. They are threatened by this. And the way that they protect themselves, the way the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service protects this stupid policy, is that they just don't do the studies. There have never been any IQ studies done in the United States. They've never looked at a possible relationship between fluoridation and thyroid function. They've never looked at fluoridation and the early onset of puberty. They've never looked at fluoridation and arthritis or bone fractures in children. They're not tracking the levels of fluoride in our bones, in our blood, in our urine. They could be doing that with every water urine test, every blood test that's being done. They're not using dental fluorosis, which is a known effect of fluoride. They don't even deny that, the mottling of the teeth. They could be using the severity of dental fluorosis as a biometric for all the epidemiological studies that you could think of pertaining to children. Never done it. It's an obvious thing. It's a basic thing. They haven't done it because simply they don't want to find out.
Well, I agree with you in everything you say. The thing that is that certainly this National Research Council study, did it say, though, that one part per million was safe? Because
No, they didn't address that. They've left that to the EPA. They just said, look, you asked us to tell you if the four parts per million is safe. They said, we do not think it's safe. It's not protective of health. It doesn't protect against severe dental fluorosis, number one. It doesn't protect against damage to the bone, number two. And also they said there are people today drinking fluoridated water who are over safe levels. But you should take all the things that we've reported here and go and do a health risk assessment and determine a new safety level, a level that is safe. Well, and that's done in two stages, by the way. They first find an MCLG, maximum contaminant level goal, which is a science-based number which is supposed to be protective of everyone. And in the Safe Drinking Water Act, it's protecting everyone from known and reasonably anticipated health effects. And then once you've got that number, then you've got to they've got to work out an MCL, maximum contaminant level, which is a federally enforceable standard. Above that level, you have to remove the fluoride from the water. And, of course, that costs money. And so you have to have a compromise between what you want, which is the MCLG, that's the ideal protective number, and the economically viable number that you can enforce federally. And you start off by mentioning this DVD. I hope that many of your listeners have $20 to spend on this DVD, because it's 15 really... Well, I take off one because I'm on it, but there's 15 really top experts in this field who talk common sense on the concerns about this issue. And this includes a Nobel Prize winner, three panel members of this National Research Council report, brilliant dentists like Hardy Lineback from Canada. He was the former president of the Canadian Dental Association for Dental Research. There's Bill Osmondson, another dentist. Both these dentists were very much for fluoridation until they read the literature. We have Vivian Howard, who's the president of the International Society for Doctors for the Environment, ISDE. We have researchers like Phyllis Mullenix, the first scientist to find that fluoride damaged animal brain and concentrated in animal brain. And a number of other distinguished scientists and environmental people. It's a must. It's only 28 minutes long. And the nice thing about it, let me tell you a story. I gave a copy of this to my dentist. And I said, I do hope you have time to read this. And he said, took it and thanked me. The next day I had to go into the dentist again to get my teeth cleaned. And I was sitting in the chair and he came in and he held up two fingers, and I wasn't sure what he was doing with holding up two fingers. And he said two things. He said, one is, how's your tooth? Because he'd yanked one out the day before. And the second thing is, I just want to tell you that that DVD is excellent, and I am going to get everybody in this office to watch it. The dental hygienist, his partner, and everybody in that office, he wants them to look at it. He just thought it was really very, very restrained. It's not aggressive, it's just common sense, and I should mention on this tape is Sir Ian Chalmers. Sir Ian Chalmers is the guy that pioneered the Cochrane reviews. This is the systematic review of that is used to look at medical literature and try to do it quantitatively and so on. So a man of huge reputation in England, Sir Ian Chalmers. So he's another person on this tape. And he said, I was a default fluoridationist. I was a default fluoridationist until I saw the tooth decay figures in Europe, where they compared the World Health Organization data, which allows you to compare tooth decay in 12-year-olds, and he said, you know, when you see that tooth decay is coming down as fast in the non-fluoridated countries as the fluoridated ones, and remember, most of Europe is non-fluoridated, he says, that's when, you know, I had to reappraise my position.
Well, no, there's a lot of very, very important interviews there. But has anybody ever looked at the impact of the hydrofluorosilicic acid that they're using that, you know, contains lead and arsenic and ammonium-220?
That's another thing, Stan. I mean, most dentists, and I ask, you know, any listener out there, you can try this to your dentist. I'll just ask your dentist, be stand well back, you know, make sure he doesn't have a scalpel or something in his hand when you say this, and say, are you aware that the chemical that they add to water where it's fluoridated is not pharmaceutical grade. It's not the kind of fluoride that you find in your toothpaste or your toothpicks or your mouthwash. This stuff is coming from the phosphate fertilizer industry. It's the wet scrubber which captures the toxic gases which for about 100 years decimated the local vegetation and crippled cattle and caused some health concerns around these phosphate fertilizer plants, and after about 100 years they were required to put a spray of water on to capture these poisonous gases, hydrogen fluoride and silicon tetrafluoride, and the solution that you get, the scrubbing liquor, is called hexafluorosilicic acid, and that's the stuff which is put into tanker trucks with along with pollutants.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back.
Yeah.
You go in and pick up the story there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that stuff. It's that hexafluorosilicic acid, along with arsenic and lead and other pollutants, which they can't dump into the sea by international law. They can't dump it locally because it's far too concentrated. But if someone will buy it from them, it stops being classified as a hazardous waste under American regulations, which with strict, you know, cradle-to-grave monitoring of transport and everything else. It becomes a product. If someone buys it from you, a hazardous waste becomes a product. It's no longer protected by the hazardous waste regulations. And, of course, the people that buy it are the water departments, public works. They put it in the drinking water. So, in other words, fluoridation, amongst other things, is not only a lousy form of medicine, using the public water supply to deliver medicine, which we've never done. Since fluoridation began in 1945, we've never, ever, ever used the public water supply to deliver medicine to people for obvious reasons. Ask any pharmacist. If you're going to give a medicine to somebody, you've got to be able to control the dose, and you've got to consider the individual when you prescribe that dose. One dose does not fit all. And also, when a pharmacist is giving a prescription, and the reason that you need a prescription is because you need a doctor there to be able to say, if they start to see side effects, stop using this medicine. There's no overall supervision in this case. And then to add insult to injury, after all of that, it violates the patient's right for informed consent to medication. Now, Dr. Monteith, you are a doctor. And you know that if you were to force medication on somebody, you could be sued. If you were to say to somebody, take this medicine, and not tell them the side effects, and only tell them about the benefits, and just said, literally force people to take it, now drink this glass of water, you could be sued. So essentially what we've allowed to happen is the absolute preposterous practice of allowing unqualified people not just to prescribe medicine to one individual, but to prescribe medicine for the whole community, young and old, sick and malnourished, the whole lot, with no individual supervision. You know, if George Orwell was writing about this, we would think it was far-fetched.
Well, the whole story really is so incredible. And then as you get into it more and more, and you realize, of course, I'm sure you know Dr. Roger Masters' work back at Dartmouth, and the profound impact this has on the brains. I mean, it increases the level of lead in the blood. Would you mind picking up that story?
First of all, you know, going back to your question about hexafluorosilicic acid, not only is this a contaminated hazardous waste product, but it's hardly been tested at all. It hasn't been put through the toxicological trials that you would need for any drug, and for that matter, the Food and Drug Administration has not even regulated fluoride. After 60 years, the Food and Drug Administration has not regulated fluoride for ingestion as a drug. The only thing they do regulate is toothpaste. And if you look at the back of your toothpaste, you'll see the warning there. But all the toxicological studies that have been done on pharmaceutical-grade sodium fluoride and not on industrial-grade hexafluorosilicic acid. But as you rightly said, what Roger Masters at Dartmouth and Myron Copeland...
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to bring our stations back on board. We'll be right back. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, our guest is Dr. Paul Conant. We're talking about the fact that they are putting something in our drinking water that has never been tested for safety. It is what is brought out as the deadly toxic race. It is too deadly to pour into a river. You can't even put it in the ocean. It's so deadly. But it's all right to put it in your drinking water as long as because now, of course, once it's been purchased, it's no longer a hazardous waste. And so your local community is purchasing the hydrofluorosilicic acid, and about 90% of fluoridated communities use this product. And of course, it contains lead and arsenic and polonium-220, and I don't know what else is in there, but none of these things are good. So go ahead and pick up this story, please.
Yeah, well, Dr. Stan, they mined the same phosphate rock in Florida, which is used to make this hexafluorosilicic acid and, of course, the phosphate products, which they want, to mine uranium. So clearly the potential is there for radioactive isotopes to break down products of a variety of carrying things, radium and so on. But going back to Roger Masters and Myron Copeland, they did two epidemiological studies which showed a relationship, an association between the level of lead in children's blood and the use of these silicon fluorides as fluoridating agents. And that's been controversial. There's a lot of argument about that, but they found it. And secondly, they've also related the use of silicon fluorides and increased crime rates. And that's how Roger Masters got involved with this. He's a professor of government, and his interest has been on the association or the cause of criminal behavior by toxic substances in the environment like lead and manganese and other things. So he was intrigued by this. But and also, what they found is something else, that they found that a combination of this silicon fluoride, the hexafluorosilicic acid, and chloramine and other chlorinating agents actually increase the leaching of lead from the solder of the pipes, the pipe joints. So even though we've removed a lot of the lead pipes into our houses, there's still this other issue of lead in the solder where the pipes are joined. And when you've got fluorides in the drinking water, it can increase the leaching of lead from those pipes. And that's very serious. So there's two ways that lead can be possibly impacting children. One is actually increasing the dissolution from the solder, and also a greater uptake in the gut when you've got a silicon fluoride in conjunction with one another. But what they've uncovered is the fact that we've been using these substances for years and years and years, and no one has seen fit to test them.
And of course, the whole idea is that there's actually lead in this. This is one of the things, along with arsenic, in this product. Isn't that right?
Yes, but there I would suggest that that's not the big issue, because this stuff is so concentrated, so dangerous in production, it has to be diluted down 180,000 to 1. And so even with significant lead levels in the product, in the hazardous material, by the time you've diluted that 180,000 to 1, it's down below regulatory levels, they would argue. But the counter-argument, And actually the bigger concern here is arsenic, because those levels are higher for this product. The counter-argument is that the maximum contaminant level goal for arsenic and lead is both set at zero. And but the MCL, again, the compromise because of the cost of removing it, for arsenic is 10 parts per billion, and I think lead is 15 parts per billion. So, you know, by the time you've done all this dilution, you're below those levels. However, the MCLG is zero because they're both known human carcinogens, cancer-causing chemicals. So the MCLG is zero. And so whilst there's an argument about setting an MCL which above which you have to spend a lot of money to get these contaminants out, there is no justification for deliberately adding these pollutants above the ideal scientific goal to protect our health, which is zero. In other words, we shouldn't knowingly be adding any arsenic or any lead to our drinking water if it's possibly avoidable. And of course, in this case, it's clearly avoidable because fluoride works topically. If you want it, you can spread it on your teeth and then spit it out. You don't have to drink it. We don't have to do this to ourselves. And that is one of the most extraordinary things in this whole thing, is that it's something we're doing to ourselves. Of all the issues out there that need correction, whether it's ozone layer damage, deforestation, you name it, there's 101 things out there that we need to do. This is the easiest one to solve once we have the political will. Because once you've got the political will, you solve this fluoride problem simply by turning off the tap.
Hold that thought.
Yep.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the
Stand back here. Our guest is Dr. Paul Conant, and please go ahead and pick up where we were, where we left off.
Yes. You know, I was thinking of something else, and in the interim, I've forgotten just where I was.
Well, we were basically talking about the fact that we were adding it over
the
arsenic and the lead.
It's easy to stop as turning off a tap. To get that political will to turn off the tap, we need two things. We need masses of people educated, and thank goodness of programs like yours, Dr. Stan, to educate people. And secondly, we need to get professionals getting off the fence, breaking out from the crowd, and actually taking the time out to read on this issue. And look at this videotape. I mean, this is a really powerful weapon. It only lasts 28 minutes. So can you get professionals? Can you get doctors? Can you get dentists? Can you get nurses? Get hygienists to take 28 minutes out of their lives to listen to 15 distinguished people explaining why this is a bad idea. As I say, it's non-threatening. People can look at it in their own homes. It's easy to get. Just go to our webpage, fluoridealert.org. And that's the first thing. Get as many people to watch that video, DVD, as possible.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Quinn.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Paul Connaughton. We're talking about the new DVD he's come up with. It's really great, and you're seeing, actually 16 people, including Dr. Paul Connaughton there, who I've talked to many times. I had no idea what he looked like, but I know some of the other people that he's interviewed, Phyllis, and we've interviewed Dr. Horsey and certainly Phyllis Mullinex, and I've talked to Harvey Lombach up there in Toronto, although he wouldn't come on my program. As he told me, I've been threatened, and I'm not about to go on the radio and risk my jobs and my family. But, you know what I have, because it's all up there on the Internet. But anyway, a lot of great people on the on this DVD, and we've recommended to you. But Dr. Connaughton was just saying there are two things we need to do. First of all, we need to get people to watch this DVD, especially the professional people who should be trying to protect the health of the people. Most of these are well-meaning people, and they have no idea because they believe what their medical and dental associations tell them. And after all, would the CDC lie to us? And the answer to that is very obviously yes. But please go ahead.
Yes, the second thing, of course, we want people to do, the professionals, is having read the literature and watched this videotape, to sign a statement called a professional statement calling for an end to fluoridation worldwide. I've forgotten where we were at the last time I was on this program, Dr. Stan, but now we're up to 2,441 professionals. That's several hundred PhDs, several hundred doctors, several hundred dentists, and nurses, and dental hygienists, and environmental writers, and many distinguished people. And if people again go to the web page, they can get a list, a whole listing of people in the United States, A to Z. They can get that listing, and also you can see the people that have signed in many other countries. This is a worldwide effort. But, you know, we don't have enough. 2,400 is not enough to make these guys blink. What we need really desperately is, if we can get that number up, we can get dentists and doctors who behind the scenes will tell you that they're against fluoridation, but they're frightened of peer pressure, they're very frightened of recriminations from their so-called professional bodies. And that tells you a lot. When somebody like Dr. Hardy Limebach, and all he's done is to tell the truth and to reappraise his position, something which should win him applause. Anybody that changes their position in public deserves praise and not abuse, not criticism. He's lost promotion because of this. He should have been a full professor by now, but his chairman actually told him that he didn't get promotion to full professor because of involvement with the fluoride issue. And other people have been fired, and then other ways they've been hassled, harassed, and so on. You don't have to do that if it's any good. You know, that's the kind of tactic that people use when something is rotten, when there's something to hide, when there's something something there that they don't want people to find out. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous that we can't have rational debate, we can't have this sorted out in the normal scientific way. But there's a whole history of preventing people from getting published, and if they get published, as you well know, Dr. Phyllis Mullinex, when her article on the brain, on rat brain and behavior, when that was accepted for publication, she was fired from the Forsyth Dental Institute in Boston. She was fired, and they said to her, the chairman of the first toxicology program is a dental school in the United States, your work is no longer relevant to dentistry. She had found that fluoride might damage the brain, and yet her work was no longer relevant for dentistry. For goodness sake, the woman was hired from Harvard to use the very sophisticated equipment, computers and video cameras, to study animal behavior, to look at the effects of chemicals on the brain. And her task was to look at all the chemicals used in dentistry to see if any of them would have negative effects on neurodevelopment. A really crucial thing. Crucial. And when she innocently, in this batch of chemicals that she had looked at, when she innocently looked at fluoride, and I assure you that this woman had no idea, had no position in the fluoridation debate whatsoever, But when she did her scientific work and found a problem, she was fired. Now, I tell you, that tells you a lot about this practice. And it's a pretty sad thing for science and for academia that some kind of practice like this, which is, after all, a technical thing, is put beyond debate. They have tried to say for over 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, they've said, oh, this is beyond debate. This is beyond debate. It's all settled. Well, you never settle anything in science, and hopefully medicine is still part of the science. You never settle anything in science. Always the potential exists for an ugly fact to destroy a beautiful theory. And in some respects, this is a beautiful theory in the sense that you could just sprinkle some stuff in the water and it magically cures tooth decay. So it's a beautiful theory, but the practice, there are many hundreds of ugly facts now about this practice, and it has to stop. And I shall spend the rest of my life on this.
Well, I hope that you will, because I think you certainly are a rallying point, and I think that your information is so valid. And again, I want you to put out your website, because people want to go there and get the material that you have and pull it down and read it and read it and read it.
Yep.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Please,
let me tell you, it's Fluoride Alert. Make sure you spell fluoride correctly. FLUORIDE, fluoridealert.org. You will find very important things on there. At the top of the page, you'll see how to order this DVD, and you can look at three excerpts from the DVD to get a feel of what it's like. Underneath that, you'll get the professional statement and a listing of all the people that are signed, and if you're a professional, any kind of professional lawyer, architect, dentist, doctor, PhD in any field, you can sign it. On the right-hand side, if you go down, there's 10 facts. On fluoridation, 10 facts, it's like two sides, a very simple summary with the scientific documentation, the references. Underneath that is 50 reasons to oppose fluoridation, something I wrote with my son in 2004. If you go to the left-hand side, you'll see the latest news. My wife spends every day updating all the news on this fluoride issue, both the science and the politics, the battles around the world. That's updated daily, so you can keep track of what's happening on the fluoride front. And then underneath that, you've got the health database, where my son, again, has organized all the documented health effects of fluoride by tissue. Fluoride in the bone, fluoride in the teeth, fluoride in the brain, fluoride in the thyroid function, and so on and so on and so on.
Well, you know, it's really the most incredible story as you get into it further and further, and you realize that there is an organized, orchestrated effort to block efforts to disseminate the truth. And you try to get this out through regular channels, and they're just not going to put it out. You try to get to the doctors, you're immediately ridiculed and demonized and marginalized. And the same thing is true with the dentists who have the courage to take a stand on that. They're immediately attacked. And, you know, you wonder yourself, why would anybody be against something that would protect the public health? And certainly this is not to protect the public health. They knew initially, in the initial studies, that this had an effect upon girls. They had their menarche early in the towns where they were fluoridated.
They knew that in 1956. So the, you know, I've described what I consider to be the great fluoridation gamble. The great fluoridation gamble began in 1945, when they started these experiments in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Newburgh, New York, and elsewhere. They knew one thing, or two things for certain. They knew that if they put fluoride in the water, it would increase the percentage of children with dental fluorosis, that's mottling discoloration of the enamel. And secondly, they knew that that was a systemic effect. In other words, you had to go inside the body. You had to swallow it to have that effect. Unlike the benefits, which are topical, the harm, of course, is systemic when it gets into the body. They knew those two things. And so the gamble that they took in 1945 was that the fluoride could damage the growing tooth cells and cause this enamel defect without damaging any other tissue in the body. Now, of course, the dental fluorosis is visible to the naked eye. It's obvious. They can't hide it. They can't deny it. But, of course, what they hide and deny is what it might be doing to the other tissues. And then run the clock forward 5 years, and you get the U.S. Public Health Service endorsing fluoridation before any of these 10-year trials have been completed, and before they had any medical studies published. There was no health data which had been published other than dental fluorosis in 1950. Immediately afterwards, you get all these promotion, like a row of dominoes from the American Dental Association, the American Public Health Association, the American Water Works Association, the American Medical Association, and so on and so on and so on. All these endorsements, still with no health studies published. Then we get the first study published in 1956. 1956, this is 6 years after the U.S. Public Health Service has endorsed fluoridation. And what did they find? They found in Newburgh, Kingston, that the fluoridated community has had boys with a higher percentage of cortical bone defects, that's damage to the outside layer of the bone, which is important for fractures, breakages. They found that. That was significant. And they also found that young girls were menstruating, on average, 5 months earlier than the girls in the non-fluoridated community. And there's two things I would add to that. If you now go back to those two communities, Newburgh and Kingston, where Kingston has never been fluoridated, and yet their tooth decay is less than the tooth decay in the community that's always been fluoridated, namely Newburgh. And the second thing that's happened is that Jennifer Luke in England has shown that fluoride accumulates in the human pineal gland, little gland between the two hemispheres of the brain, which makes melatonin and other impacts on the endocrine system and so on. Incredible. Again, incredible. And so, you know, just recently, the UK government is really pushing fluoridation. They've only got 10% of the UK drinking fluoridated water. That's upsetting to the UK government. So they're pushing fluoridation like crazy right now in the UK. I went over 4 times to testify in Southampton, where they're trying to introduce fluoridation. I presented the National Research Council report. I gave them the 23 studies. I talked about it at length. And what they did is a few days before they made their decision, they hired this firm of consultants called Bayesian Associates, which does a lot of work for the UK government, and they trashed the NRC study, and they trashed all the IQ studies, and chucked them out, and then within a few days, without us being essentially have the time to respond to these documents, they then unanimously voted fluoridation into Southampton, even though their own surveys showed that 72% of the people didn't want it.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back.
Yep.
Go right ahead. 72% of the people didn't want it, but they were going to force it on them anyway, right?
You know, and then they chucked out the science. They ignored the democracy. And then they chucked out our science based upon this consultant's report. And quite frankly, I mean, these consultants, there's two things. They said they found all the weaknesses that they could possibly find in these 23 studies on IQ. They wrote it up in about 48 pages, all the weaknesses. And my response to them is to say, you know, you may have found a lot of weaknesses in those studies, but each one of those is better than all the studies you've done in the UK because you haven't done anything. I mean, even a weak study is better than people that are so irresponsible they don't even look. And if you don't look, you don't find.
But I think you would want to be sure that it was safe first before you
Absolutely.
Did it. I mean, the idea
yes.
you just talk about destroying the minds of the children, and where is the outcry?
Yeah. Well, most people don't know it, you see. I mean, we don't have many investigative journalists left in this country or around the world. So they treat this very superficially. You get journalists after journalists who tell you about Dr. Strangelove and the mad general who thought it was a communist conspiracy, number one. Then you get this very superficial treatment where they, you know, being a professional journalist, they've got to quote both sides. So what do they quote? They say, the Center of Disease Control says that fluoridation is one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. And all our local dentists and pediatricians and others say that fluoridation is fine, it's safe, it's effective, safe and effective. And, now you've got to be a good journalist, So they give the other side, and Mrs. Smith down the road thinks it's a bad idea. Or this retired chemistry professor thinks it's a bad idea, and give a couple of arguments. And that's supposed to be journalism. Well, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If that's all people hear, they're not going to be concerned. They're going to go with the white coats. They're going to go with, quote, authority. You know, why would those nice dentists hurt us? And they would say things like this. This is a classic. Oh, we've been doing this for 60 years, and if there was a problem, we would know about it by now. Oh, no, you wouldn't. If you didn't look, if you don't study the issue, something like, here's a shocker. If you shifted the IQ of the human population by 5 IQ points, and what I'm saying now is simply a mathematical analysis of a normal distribution curve, if you shift the whole population by 5 IQ points, you are not going to notice the change with the average person. A parent is not going to notice the difference between a child with an IQ of 100 or 95, nor is a school teacher, nor will you notice it walking down the street.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. Well, our guest this afternoon has been Dr. Paul Conant, and we were just carrying on a fascinating conversation about the lowering of the IQ. Maybe only 5 points, but 5 points can make a lot of difference. Well, we're out of time. I hope I can get you back onto some of the programs.
Oh, yeah, but Stan, can I quickly say that if you did that, you'd halve the number of geniuses in your society, and you'd double the number of mentally handicapped.
Good point. God bless, and thanks very much, and thanks for everything you do.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Bye-bye. I hope you've enjoyed our interview with Dr. Paul Conant. If you want to get his DVD, we do carry it. We think it's excellent. It's very well done, very professionally done. We have other DVDs on this subject put out by our good friend, Dr. David Kennedy. I think that probably one of the best DVDs, even if I do say so, is my talk on the hidden agenda and the syllabus. There you'll see the letters from all of the health departments of almost everywhere in the world saying, why would anybody in their right mind want to fluoridate the water? You need to get the material. We've got a 4-tape set on water fluoridation. We have a book on water fluoridation. Name escaped me right at the moment, but just ask for the book on water fluoridation. It's very, very well done. So we have the 4-tape set. There's a number of DVDs, including Dr. Conant's, which we certainly are going to be recommending. We've got a supply of them in because we think it's well worthwhile. And then, of course, we hope that you will realize that they're poisoning our children. They know exactly what they're doing. These people are not stupid. Now, most of the doctors, most of the dentists have no idea what's going on. And, of course, when you begin to say what we're doing is poisoning the children, well, they said that couldn't be true. And yet we are. And you can actually check this out. That the American Dental Association, the American Pediatric Association, has said that no child less than 1 year of age should be given any fluoridated water if they fluoridated the water. So if you're not going to, of course, you know, give them fluoridated water, what are you going to give the children? Well, of course, the average pediatrician, the average doctor does know that. But you check this out and get that report from the American Research Council. Get this information. Go up in the Internet and look at Dr. Hertzi's website. They're the people who work for the EPA, NTEU, www.NTEU280.org, www.NTEU280.org. Pull down their website and read Dr. material put up there by the people who work for the FDA, for the EPA, trying to tell the American people that they're poisoning our children. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com, and you can go up there and look at all the DVDs we have on water fluoridation, but you can ask specifically for the one by Dr. Conant when you call in. Get this information. Get it to your doctor. Get it to your dentist. Insist. Tell them that they are doing harm to their patients. Do they really care? At least listen to what these people have to say. And, of course, the lineup that Dr. Conant has is really very impressive. Here's a professor of chemistry who's retired and given his whole life to this battle. Fluoridealert.org. fluoridealert.org. Go up there to his website. Pull down his material. You'll find out that it lowers the sperm count in men. I think one reason it's being used is because it actually, of course, decreases the fertility both in men and women and dramatically increases the incidence of Down's disease, especially in younger women. And all across America, tragedy after tragedy. It increases hip fractures in the elderly, but if you think that there are too many elderly, they'd be better off dead. Why, go ahead and fluoridate the water. Well, the studies are there. In fact, we have a lot of these in our syllabus, and you need to get them. The scientific studies are there. Basically, of course, fluoride works locally because it kills the bacteria. Dental caries is a product of bacteria, and the bacteria come and they get into the tooth and they eat away the enamel. That's what it's all about. And fluoridated toothpaste works because it tends to kill the bacteria, and that's why fluoride locally works. But when you take it internally, it destroys you. It destroys your thyroid. It destroys your bone. Destroys your brain. Destroys your children. Our number 1-800-544.